I've had this guy on the show before. Nicholas Baer joins us, former Iowa men's basketball player under Coach Fran McCaffrey. And we talk about Coach Fran today, Nick's relationship with him, what he means to Nick's career and his life now as an adult, as well as playing in March Madness, the perspective of being in the tournament. Why is it special? Why can teams that are not as highly rated suddenly find the magic in March? All of this and more. Grab the popcorn, sit back, relax, have a day. Let's go. Informal intro. Nicholas Baer joins the show once again. Had him on the podcast, God, a long time ago. What year did you graduate, Nick?
I graduated 2019. So I think okay. We were talking when I was playing professionally with the Raptors 905. But since then, I have now developed a true washed up walk-on. Like, I'm truly made that evolution now into just playing in men's leagues and done playing professionally. So it's nice to be part of the brotherhood today.
Let's go.
Are you just balling in those men's leagues or what? Are you just dominating?
I enjoy it. Yeah, I play with Austin Ash as well. So we're both here in Des Moines and we play in men's leagues here. So it's been a good time. There's actually some pretty decent competition here in Des Moines, but yeah, good cardio, and I'd rather do that than get on a treadmill and run any day.
But I just gotta know, is this team just running it up like back to back back to back men's league champs or what?
So this is a recent team. It's our second season. One tournament title. Now we have the final this upcoming Wednesday. So we will make sure to keep everybody informed. Obviously, this is the highlight of our weeks coming up here. So, but no, it's been a good time.
Kev, can you imagine you walk in, you're like, I'm going to play some pickup today, you know?
I'm bad, but
same.
Just imagine if there's like men's league football teams and you're just like, you know, we just got just like a couple of our dudes that, you know, we're 25. We just finished playing and, you know what? We're just going to strap it up against some dudes that haven't played since high school and just see how it goes.
That would be rough.
Austin Ash, he lets it loose. He pulls up, and anybody who's watched Iowa basketball in the past knows he's not shy. So he lets it loose.
Electric when Austin Ash was just firing in from downtown.
I don't think I've ever had more fun than watching Ash play.
Dude, he's so much fun. He's fun to play with too. He's chucking.
I mean, the other guys on the other team, you're just like, what are we
doing? I know. It takes like 5-10 minutes for people to be like, oh, he's actually going to pull up from this far.
This is Caitlin's in the building. Yeah. The time of year is probably an exciting one for you. And it's, like you said, you're part of the brotherhood of washed up athletes now. So it probably feels a little bit different. But do you still get that amped feeling on Thursday morning of the tournament? Does it feel the same still?
I was texting my buddies, Charlie Rose, Brady Ellison, and I texted him. I was like, feels like I'm waking up on Christmas morning, Thursday morning. Like, it still feels that way. It felt that way even before I played, had a chance to play in the tournament. Like, we'd grow up going to the closest regional site here in Iowa, wherever that was, whether it was Omaha, Milwaukee, I would travel and try to go to that first round of games. So still definitely does. I'll usually go back and look at like some of our like previous games against that we had a chance to play in the tournament, but yeah, it's special. Best time of the year. Always enjoy getting a chance to watch games and still obviously be a big college basketball junkie with my buddies. So it's a good time.
What's the Nicholas Baer bracket looking like right now?
Oh God, I regret to inform it's like bottom 26%. My wife's doing well though. You guys will all be thrilled that my wife's doing well. So I have Duke winning it all still. So that part I still have that going for me. But I made the mistake of picking too many upsets, It's been a tournament of chalk, so it's not going to help.
I had Creighton, I had Gonzaga.
Yep,
I had it all. It's not going well. I do have Duke as the champion as well. Who's your champ, Kev?
I picked Houston.
Okay.
Well,
you got a chance
this year.
Got to play in several. You can tell when these guys step on the court that it's another level. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, is it just the magic of the tournament that's unexplainable where like it's like anything can happen. Everyone feels like they have a chance. Why can you explain in any sort of way why it's different when it's the tournament?
The best way I can really explain it is like just the magic and wonder of like a one off game like this. Like you can have like a, you know, crap season or like, you know, crawl your way into the tournament, make it and like playing against a team that's playing really well. But if you just shoot lights out and the other team comes out cold, like you can get teams on their heels. You can get teams to play tight, which has happened a couple times here in this tournament. But I think that's what it's all about. And obviously anybody who is really striving to play college basketball at a high level, like this is the reward. This is what you want to play on. You want to be playing on CBS with, you know, these big time announcers making calls. Like you hear that March Madness music. That's what makes it so special. So I think that's the best way I can explain it is just like, also like my senior year, like knowing like this could be like the end of your career too. You know, like it's kind of a unique emotion like to go through of, hey, like this could be like the greatest day of my life where this could absolutely suck. And after 2 hours, we're going to know. So that's the best way I can kind of put it.
After
two hours, I mean, it's different because like in football, and you know, it's obviously changed in the last year with the playoffs, but like you pretty much always knew when your last game was going to be, unless you're fighting for like your 6 or 5 and 6 and you needed a win to get to the bowl game or whatever. But yeah, being excited, being, I mean, it's got to make you a little bit extra nervous now, like, you know,
a little, yeah. I mean, it's more so before, like, kind of once you're in it and like. It's kind of like anybody else. Now, I felt this way after graduate. I'm more nervous watching these guys play than I was ever actually playing. I'm sure you guys kind of feel that way too.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Like, it's way more nerve-wracking to watch than it is to play. Because once you're playing, it's like, yeah, the adrenaline pump, and you're just, you know, you muscle memory and everything like that. So definitely nervous kind of before the game. But, like, I think back to some of those runs we had in the tournament, like Adam Woodbury hitting a game winner, like, against Temple. Like, that was sweet. Coming back from 25 against Tennessee in that run and just kind of having that magic of March, you know, to be part of something like that was pretty special. So those are the kind of moments that you always look back on fondly for sure.
I do relate to that. Kev, for a few years there, it was like really bad because it felt like when there were still guys in the program that you played with, still, that really gave you the sense of ownership of the program. Like
it's definitely the worst, the first year you're out.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're like, this is how I left the program. Right. I have like, this is the most I'll ever have of my hand still in the cookie jar of like, this is a representation of me, but now I don't have any 0% of like say, and it wasn't like I had a lot of say anyway, playing 7 snaps a game, but like, it was still more than nothing. Right. So like when you know everybody on the roster, you're just like,
also, I'm sure you guys feel this too. Like, I mean, cause I like my first year, I saw my brother on the team. I saw like really like my close friends were on the team and wanted them to do well, but also on the flip side, like if a game went wrong, it's like, man, I know that film session's gonna be rough tomorrow. Oh, yeah. And I know what that's like, and I just already feel bad for it. Like those kind of things as well, you know. So yeah, as we've kind of, you know, gotten older and a little bit further away from the program, it's not quite as bad, but still pretty invested as well.
How does film work for a basketball team? Like there's such quick turnarounds, right? It's so much different than football. Mm-hmm. Like, let's say you make it to, like, let's just say this first weekend of the tournament, as we record this, this is actually going to come out a little later in the week. So this is going to be right before the second weekend starts. We're recording this as the first weekend of the men's side, at least, has almost finished up. We're close to getting our Sweet 16 here Sunday evening. Let's say you win that first game on Thursday. What's the 48 hours look like from Thursday to Saturday, generally?
Yeah, so I had a chance to play the tournament twice. We won the first game each time. And in my experience, it was pretty much like, all right, hey, nice job. Let's get ready for Tennessee. And it's like, all right, we have some scouting reports. Our assistant coaches have already had them fully scouted. They pretty much go through like a tentative game plan. A lot of it kind of depends what time our first game ended. Mm-hmm. So there were a couple of times like we played that first game. So we kind of had that full afternoon to do a full prep and walkthrough type of thing. But there's other times where we played like a late game. It's like, okay, you get done at like 10:30 at night. And it's like, all right, do we decide, like, what's more important? Should we walk through just a brief film session or should we just get some sleep into it in the morning? So sometimes we just do a brief film session, but the turnaround's more so like mental. It's like, all right, we're not going to go full speed on any of this stuff, but it's a team we really don't know that well. It's from another conference. We haven't played them before. The good news is they haven't played us. So all of our sets that everybody in conference has scouted for us for like 10 years, maybe we can get like a couple easy ones. But obviously we have the same disadvantage as well. So a lot more film sessions, kind of like brief, quick ones, player personnel, overall team scheme. And then, yeah, kind of before you know it, it's all right, game time. We're playing, got to turn around and get going. So that's the best way I would describe it.
It's just like, you know, that day in between is like just, you just have so much going on from a preparation standpoint that you just don't even kind of let the nerves get to you, that like, you know, you just won the game, you know, maybe it's close, maybe it was emotional, maybe it was like, you know, like you said, it's win or go home. Then you got 24 hours to process that, get on to the next team and prepare? And it's like, do you even have time to be like in your head? Or
well, part of it too is you feel a little relieved that you're staying the weekend. You know, you don't want to go home first week. Like, that's the biggest mm-hmm. part. But it's also kind of like, I don't want to like compare it to like a near-death experience, but you know, like, all right, like I was almost done, but now we're back. We have a chance to do it again. It's like the things you kind of took for granted, like, all right, hey, you know what? I get to play cards with my buddies tonight after we do this film session. And like, we get to go on the bus together again. And we get like to do all this stuff together for like at least, you know, 48 more hours type of thing. So mm-hmm. that kind of stuff I definitely think about. But also, it's kind of fun. Like, you got games going on. Like, you can see other teams, how they're doing. What, like, there is enough downtime where you can still watch games and check things out. But I think also, like, it's more like the anticipation and excitement about, you know, getting a chance to play on stage again.
I was going to say, I mean, you've got that, I mean, the Thursday through Sunday slate of games is like maybe some of the best hours of sports. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just like, even I'm not even a basketball guy. I watch very little basketball during the regular season, but then it's just constant from Thursday through Monday, because the girls will finish tomorrow their first round. Mm-hmm. And especially with the growth of their game and like the popularity, you know, teams, you know, players, it's fun to watch women's mm-hmm. basketball more than it used to be. Do you have time to actually kind of sit down and like, all right, I'll put the personnel report down. Like, I think I got an idea who I'm going to guard tomorrow. Let me catch an hour of like the, you know, the 14-3 game here going on. Like, can I?
Right. And so it's kind of like how our day is structured too. Like, we'll have like a walkthrough like in that in between day, which is fine. But like, there's definitely like a downtime of like 2 or 3 hours where it's like, all right, at a certain point, you kind of know who they are. You know what you're going to do. You know what your responsibilities are. Like, I could look at the scouting report for 10 hours, you know, all day and all night. But like, it's kind of best to like get your mind off of something and get a chance to return, like, just enjoy something too, you know? So,
As you get further away from it and you're just the men's league mm-hmm. guy now,
that's me.
Are there any perspective shifts? Like, as you've gotten older and you've gotten further away from the game at that level, that you are able to see clearer now or in a different way than when you were playing?
I think, well, the first one's just kind of like gratitude for having the experience that I had. Like, always like super thankful for what I was able to experience at the University of Iowa and being part of the program. I think on a physical level, now that I've gotten older, like, I look back and I thought I was slow and now I'm really slow. And it's like, looking back, I'm like, man, dude, I could like really jump, right? Like, didn't really have a super quick first step, but it's way quicker than I got now type of thing. So I think I look at the game now and I see from like a physical standpoint, like, just how big these guys are, how athletic they are. Like, that's the part where it's a little bit more staggering to me than when I was playing. It's like, oh, it's just, you know, just a big guy. Like, you know, go against that every night type of thing. But that's probably the part that I've noticed the most, is just like how, like, high level athleticism, how that's changed a little bit.
I think, Kev, I have similar moments when I'm watching the NFL, really, but like even college ball sometimes. I'm like, dude, somehow I was running down the field with that guy, right?
Yes.
And I don't know how. It certainly didn't look great at the time, but it looked, it didn't look bad. It was mm-hmm. okay.
Yeah, and I would also say, to Nick's point a little bit, 18-year-olds are a little bit more built than 18-year-olds were even just 10 years ago.
That's true. That's true.
It's crazy what's going on.
Which is a good thing. I think, like, you know, we've talked about before, like, strength and conditioning at the high school level is getting much better.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, even like
athletes in a more safe and more effective way at a younger age.
Yeah. I mean, even like the Cooper Flagg kid for Duke. You can tell you just like look at him and he's like, he's not developed. Like, he really isn't.
Well, he's correct me if I'm wrong, he reclassified. He should still be in high school, no?
He's pretty young. Yeah. He's going to be like, I think he's turned, I'm not sure his exact birthday, but he could have held back a year, but that's he decided insane. To reclassify. So that's the thing too. Like, you look at that guy, like, I mean, I was watching him today. I had a great game today and like, I've watched him a little bit this season, but like, I mean, he got like, he looks like a kid, kind of. Like, he's still got like some zits, like stuff that looks like you look like on face level, like you should be in high school. And then he's just absolutely dunking all over everybody.
That's what I'm saying. Is like, you look him in the face and you kind of look at his arms and his undershirt. He's wearing like a t-shirt. Mm-hmm. He looks like a ninth grader. Like, there's the muscle mass is very like kid like. You're like, and then you watch him and he elevates and will just hammer on people. And you're like, oh my God.
Which is scary, because like, he's still going to grow into his body and be like even so more much athletic, unbelievable. Which is
so insane. I got this question for you. I mean, he's going to be an NBA draft pick. Mm-hmm. But he's probably not going to peak as an athlete or as a basketball player for like 7 more years. Like,
that's what's always so weird. Like,
you draft I mean, I guess you have the best chance to re-sign him if you draft him, but like,
yeah,
you know,
that's a good question. Cause I know, like, I feel like the peak age for like all these NBA guys is like 25 to 28. Kind of like that's where you reach your peak athleticism. Like, you played for 7 years, you played however many hundreds of games now. Like, that's kind of your peak years, but so like a raw talent level, he's going to be able to be inserted in the NBA, no problem type of thing. So that's what's interesting, because I feel like on the flip side of that, all of guys like, oh, that guy got drafted in the first round like 4 years ago. It's like, dude, that guy's got to be washed. And you see, he's like 22. It's like, who would quit on a 22-year-old? Like, in a different perspective, it's like, dude, 22, you got your whole life ahead of you. But in the NBA, it's kind of like, we've seen enough tape type of thing. Which is
I feel like football, baseball, and basketball are all so different in that. You see, like, guys in baseball, it takes 7 years just to get to the majors.
Mm-hmm.
Like, after congratulations.
After they did a full 4 years in college.
Especially if some of these guys who are like huge prospects out of high school, they get drafted out of high school. You do 5-6 years. I have a couple guys that I know who are in the farm system from like Marshalltown or just like somehow I know them through family. And it's like 6 years later, getting a shot, you know, it's not Brody Brecht, right? You don't just like, or Paul Skeens, like, you're not just the guy. There's you hear about these guys like 27 years old getting his first major league start here on opening day for the Cardinal. It's like, there's literally been guys in the NBA for almost a decade that are that almost the same age.
Yeah, like football players are like lucky to make it to 27.
Right, like football, your peak age is probably like your senior year of college if you run like a 4 or 5 year race, or like you're 23 or 4 in the league. There you go. You know,
that's
like
short windows.
You got 3 years. I mean, you're not getting hit like you are in football and the other sports. That's why it's so much shorter. You staying injury free in the men's league over there?
I am. So I'm knock on wood. So far, so good. But yeah, injury free. I think partially because I just don't accelerate as fast as I would to potentially break anything. So if you don't accelerate too fast, can't get too hurt. And no, I'm pretty much just spotting up from three, pick and pop, rebound, deflect shots, do what I can. But yeah, hopefully more of the same.
Gotta watch out for those Achilles when those.
I stretch that so much. That's that's the main thing I stretch.
When number I'm one fear. Yeah. Number one fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some kid just busted it yesterday, 2 days ago.
Really?
Kansas or Carolina?
I think I did see that.
And it wasn't like some crazy like going up for a dunk or coming down with a rebound. Like, he was literally just like, he got 8 inches off the ground and came down weird. And you just see that like non-contact. You're like, oh no.
That's the thing is, like, you like those guys have made that jump thousands and thousands of times.
Yeah.
And for some reason, just that one jump, like, that's why it goes, why it snaps. So
that's what scares me too. Is like, you got Division I athletes snapping their Achilles on like a routine play, like just running up the court. And you're like, okay, so at 30, I do a lot of athletic stuff, a lot of working out, do a lot of box jumps. When is my time coming?
Right. You know? That's it. Gotta keep stretching.
What about these guys, these poor guys that Nick's playing against? Like, they probably don't do any plyometric work. they jump once a week when they come to play at the rim.
Yeah.
The rest is pretty disaster.
That poor Achilles is hanging on by a thread.
Nick, you got a podcast of your own, don't you?
I do. Yep, 3 Points Podcast. I do it with myself, my two best friends, Charlie Rose, Brady Ellenson. Kind of a mix. We talk a lot of Iowa basketball for sure. And then we also talk some Premier League and Champions League soccer. So we're all big soccer fans. So we talk quite a bit of soccer. And then outside of that, we're all big college basketball junkies. So we did kind of a podcast previewing the tournament here for this upcoming week. And we'll probably reconnect here, kind of discuss the first round of games as well. But definitely a passion project, something I enjoy doing on the side. It's been kind of, I think you guys might relate to this as well. Like, I think the biggest thing I enjoy out of it is just like getting to hang out with my friends, kind of like once a week or so. Yeah. Like, the content itself is like fun, it's fine, but like, it's more so like just getting a way to connect with my friends outside of just like talking on the phone every now and then.
Yeah, I say this to my wife Alyssa all the time. It's like, you know, my favorite thing about this, like, yeah, we have fun guests on, we get to do some fun events every now and then. But it like almost forces you to talk to your friends a couple times a week. Just spend an hour and just chit chat about some nonsense, and yeah, it's fun.
I think I've probably taken that for granted more than you and Drake have. Drake for a very long time. Drake not here, by the way, Nick. He probably was the last time we talked to you.
I know. I was keeping an eye out for him, hoping he'd make a late appearance.
We all keep an eye out for him, just hope his heart is still ticking.
You kind of know who Drake is. It's sort of just every day we wake up. Is he alive? Yep. Is he not? We're not sure. He'll pipe in every once in a while. He's off doing his own thing. But yeah, he would always say, like, after we got a couple dozen episodes into this, he's like, I just get on here to talk to you guys. I don't really. Yeah. And Kevin has mentioned it a couple times. I've never really sat down and really thought about, like, if we didn't have the podcast, yes, we would still have similar to, I'm sure you do. You have a text, you know, you text thread with all your former teammates or the guys you lived with in college. And that goes pretty much every day. You're sending each other memes, you know, videos, funny stuff. That, you know, there's always action in there, but like, how much would I actually talk to Kevin face to face?
Exactly.
I guarantee you.
How much do you talk to the other guys in that group chat that aren't on this podcast face to face?
None. And it's sad. Like, that's sad.
It sounds like you're campaigning for everybody to do their own podcast. Like there needs to be more of a saturated podcast.
We're all about saturating the space.
Saturate the market, man. Yeah. And the market will decide.
Then we basically, we all come on each other's podcasts. And no one's even watching anymore, but it's just four FaceTiming each other.
That's all it is.
Putting out to the internet for everyone to look at, but seriously, no one's going to.
I mean, it's like any other form of social media. Everybody has an Instagram. Everybody have a podcast. I mean, I think most people's general thing is like, the joke is when you see a podcast clip that's just like, you're so stupid, they're just like, wow. Mm-hmm. Podcast microphones are way too cheap.
That's the consensus for sure.
Fortunately, we've been able to like kind of elevate above that. You're going to be episode like 580.
Nice.
Eight. We're closing in on episode number 600 very fast.
Fun fact, did you guys know that 90% of podcasts don't get more than 10 episodes?
It's what they say.
Really?
It's what they say. So big outlier.
I would say pushing 600, you guys got to be in the top 0.1%. There you go.
You'd think.
Yeah.
We call that numbies around here.
Numbies, that's right.
Numbies. Right. Yeah. But yeah, it is a passion project. I mean, the same thing. We started this thing. I think we got super lucky in a lot of different ways, but like it still is probably more so than anything. Majority. Hobby. Yeah, it's a hobby. Yep. We do get to have some sick interviews, have guys like you on, talk Iowa sports. We've had some legends on. Made a little bit of money off of it, but like most of it's just like, yeah, let's get on and shoot the shit. Cause I don't have a lot of, I don't really have friends.
There you go. Well, that's the thing too. It's just like, kind of like you mentioned, like just getting on and having friends, like to talk to your friends, but also like, kind of like you mentioned, you guys get some guests on, like new perspectives and everything like that makes it fun too.
Yeah. You hear some fun stories for sure. There's been some good laughs over the years. So what was the, you can send the fans over to your podcast to get the full recap. What was your expectations on your podcast coming into this tournament? What were some major themes we were looking for?
Yeah, so I kind of created a manifesto essentially for like rules, like as you're like filling out your bracket, kind of like good things to take a look at and evaluate. So
you worried me there for a quick second when you said manifesto. That was a little hook.
You know, consensus people were like weren't really listening. It's like, oh, we got a manifesto. Boom. Let's see if this guy's about to go.
3 points pod. Fire it up.
That's it. Fire it up. But I just kind of like for me, I was fading the Mountain West for the most part, just because I thought as a whole they've really underperformed in the tournament. We talked. The biggest thing to pat ourselves on the back that we kind of called out was like, we think this is going to be a pretty chalky tournament on the whole. Yeah. Like these one seeds, two seeds, three seeds, we think for the most part, these guys are going to advance. And I've seen a lot of kind of commentary about the tournament so far be, oh, we haven't had a lot of upsets or, oh man, like these games, this tournament's kind of been disappointing from an upset perspective. But I think it's really set us up for some pretty incredible matchups in the Sweet 16, Elite 8, Final Four. Like everything's going to be like, I'm already taking a look here at some of these matchups in the Sweet 16 and licking my chops at just the good basketball that's going to be played here. So that's my thought, but that's kind of a few of the different things that we talked about on our podcast. But I'm really looking forward to kind of these next round of games being some high level basketball.
Yeah. How about the Big Ten showing up? I mean, Illinois just dropped the first game for the conference.
Wisconsin
last night.
Oh, Wisconsin did. You're right.
Yeah, let's not forget a time to make sure we mention that Wisconsin lost. Let's make sure that
yes.
Badgers blew it for everybody.
They came back. They almost made it. But yeah, it's I saw it leading up to that game before that Wisconsin game. I think the Big Ten was 10-0 straight up and 10-0 against the spread for any bettors out there.
So, which is nuts.
Great teams cover, right?
Great teams cover. So,
Hold on. Because that speaks to something. Because everybody this year is talking about the whole narrative was the SEC, deepest conference in the history of the sport. What are your opinions on that?
I watched a lot of the SEC this year. I think it's very top heavy. Like you look at, I mean, obviously like the Florida's of the world, Auburn's of the world, Kentucky just advanced. But I do think there was a little SEC bias. Maybe ESPN did a pretty good job of propping up that conference for some of their own, business reasons. But I think toward, like, you look at some of those teams that maybe underperformed, I mean, the Georgias of the world, some of those, like Vanderbilt, some of those teams that maybe didn't perform as well, but in the tournament would played, in a tough conference and got the benefit of the doubt. So, I think definitely those top end teams are going to be making deep runs, and I'm excited to watch. I mean, Walter Clayton today, like, completely brought them back against UConn. Like, I'm looking forward to watching those kind of players. But, definitely a tough conference. I think definitely the best conference in the nation. But, I mean, I think they have, 14 teams in or 13 teams in? 14 yeah. That's a bit rich for me, especially leaving out a couple other teams. So, I'm surprised Oklahoma got a 9. They were 9 seed and they went 7-13 in conference. That's where I kind of have a bit of an issue. Teams like kind of getting that much benefit of the doubt, but the top end teams are definitely playing well.
I think Drake's a great example of they lost 3 games. I get it. They're in the Missouri Valley. 3 games. One, if they don't win their conference championship, there's a chance they don't get in the tournament.
Right. Like, I'd rather have a 30-win team in the tournament than a team that went
something's got to change there where, like, if they don't win that conference championship, but they still have that same resume. Like, that's a tournament team, and we got to figure out a way to get them in instead of the 14th best SEC team.
We talked about this on our podcast too. Like, North Carolina getting in was an absolute joke, but like their athletic director sitting on the board of the committee. Like, maybe we probably need to diversify who's evaluating getting into the committee or like who makes the decisions that gets into the field type of thing. So. Lots of discussion, lots of controversy.
They made a crazy comeback. They were down 20 points, and then I think they tied it up late, and then just kind of shook the bed in the last 2 minutes of the game. But I'm curious, what are your thoughts on the first four? And we keep expanding ways to it started with 64 teams. Apparently, that's not enough. We go to 68. There's talk of maybe adding more play-in teams. Like, is 64 enough, why are you a fan of the?
There's no need to add to the field. I mean, you looked at UNC lost first round, Xavier lost first round. Like, to me, adding to the field is just to get more games, to get more money, to get more TV. That's really the extent of it, which would I be shocked if the NCAA or TV broadcasting rights decided to do that? No, but I don't think it would benefit college basketball as a whole. I don't think there's a national champion lurking in the first four, or if it would be the first 8 or first 16, whatever they decide to do type of thing. So I think it's good the way it is. I don't mind the first four. It's just kind of a little appetizer for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But no, I'm against expanding the teams. I look at some of the teams who didn't make it either. And it's outside of West Virginia, I didn't really think there was really strong teams. Like, if Indiana got in at 17-15 or whatever, what are we doing? Like, that's not a team that really deserved to get in.
I mean, the highest or I guess lowest seed, whatever way you want to classify it, is the UConn team that was a 7 won it, I believe.
Yep.
And so any 7 seed or better – every single year, they're getting in the tournament. Like, they're not close to missing the tournament.
Correct.
And you want to find the team who's going to win the tournament. And so, theoretically, you could claim they found that team every year. So,
yeah. And I'm not saying, everybody in the first four, if they're not going to be a national champion, why bother turning them in? But at the same point, I don't think there's a missing market for additional games to be added.
I do think I saw this. I think an easy change would be don't make the first four have any of those 16 seeds that won their conference championships.
Yes. So I've seen that. I also saw those 16 seeds, though, if they win that game, they get paid out a full game's worth of money for their conference, which that part's kind of cool. Mm. Obviously for their conference. But I mean, for those guys, I'd feel like I'd be in a bad position. Dude, we just won our conference tournament. Let's play on Thursday. Let's play on Friday. I shouldn't have to be competing in Dayton.
That's sort of what I was getting at, is you want to feel the full experience of it.
Yep.
And so you want to be on that opening day. And if you're then we play Wednesday night to maybe play for Friday, you might walk away from that feeling you didn't really get the tournament feel. So I don't know, but I do understand the money thing, because that's big for those small schools. This is a fun question that Kevin and I and Drake and a lot of guys have talked about on the podcast. Like, who would we want to play that we never got to play? And it's always like Alabama, or, you know, somebody that, you know, we nearly had a shot in 2015 if we would have made the college football playoff. Do you ever, and the tournament provides some of those really fun matchups. Like, you get to see the Big East versus a Big Ten team that, like, just wouldn't, you know, they didn't play or schedule each other in the non-conference. And so they, you know, all of a sudden Creighton's matched up with Purdue, and it's like, oh, this is sick. Right. Who comes to mind? You know, you had a 5-year career at Iowa. Who did you not get to play that would have been fun?
Man, I tell you what, the first team that comes to mind my senior year was Zion's year at Duke. Ooh. And we got that senior year, we were a 10 seed, and we thought, like, you know what, we might get like an 8-9. And if we get an 8-9, we could be on a one line with Zion and the Beatles, essentially. So that's the one that jumps out to me, is like, I mean, get a chance to play against those guys. And like, cause I remember, I don't think I've seen a team since that like had that much like of an influence or power or like hype around them. Mm-hmm. Since then, so even like, obviously imagine me trying to guard Zion, like that probably is not going to end up well for me, but like still, like getting a chance to play those guys and play at that level on like a marquee matchup would have been pretty cool. So that's, which obviously is pretty easy, like, oh dude, you want to play Duke, real creative take there.
It's
like
a good
those guys, but those guys like at that time were like must-see TV. I mean, they had Obama going to games and like everybody, like presidents, you know, stars. It was like, you know, celebrity row there. So that part would have been cool.
I think if you just had like a pizza slice in your hand, you could have guarded Zion just fine.
There you go.
He got big in a hurry once he got the league.
Guy just throws the ball to the defense. Give me that slice of Zion.
Yeah, that's it.
Hey, I think he's slimmed down a little bit now. He's trying to get back into it. I see stuff all the time about it.
I hope
he has the right shoes on too. He might blow out the sole.
Yep.
Quickly, before we move on, I don't know if you can see that, Nick, but down on the bottom of the screen, presented by the Iowa Egg Council, no better sponsor for this podcast. I'm not sure if you're a big egg guy, probably had plenty of protein sources when you were at Iowa. How's the diet nowadays?
3 eggs every morning. I have eggs all the time. That's not even plug in here. Just, you know, Tyler, I know you kind of tweet out different like health kind of stuff, but like starting your day with some protein, like I'll have like some eggs, either like some chicken sausage, something, but like, for me, it's more like figuring out how to mix up my eggs of like, all right, scrambled, or like if I'm in a rush, just over easy. Recently, I've gotten into like some egg bake. So don't want to like toot my horn as an egg connoisseur here, but I'm a frequent egg eater. So
are you like an egg bacon and then, or sorry, egg bake for like a meal prep for the whole week type of guy?
Yeah. Like Sunday night, get a whole tray of egg bake, cut it up, go work out in the morning, come back, eat. Get to work, and it's just easy peasy.
Dude, I'm telling you, if you like eggs, and you really should, if you're listening to the podcast and you haven't gotten on the egg train, I know they were expensive. I think the prices are coming back down. In fact, I thought about Kevin the last episode we recorded. He goes, pasture raised only, brown eggs. Picked up some Nelly's brown eggs at the Fairway, the local Fairway. You make a little egg bake, you throw some bacon in there, some veggies, some cheese. Yep. Bro. There's no better way to start the morning. And then you also, like, I don't understand how people can start their morning with the super sugary coffees or the donut. Like, you just automatically start your day fuzzy, just carb overload. You're already tired at 9 a.m. Get yourself some eggs. Iowa Egg Council. Iowa is the number one producing state of eggs in the country.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Number one. 45 million laying hens, 15 billion eggs a year coming out of yours. State of Iowa.
I did not know that our egg game was like that. I knew we had the pork game. I knew we obviously had the corn game. I didn't know our egg game was like that.
Egg game's on top, baby.
Damn.
Yeah. So
shout out to the Iowa.
Don't make that mistake again, man. All right. Yeah. Our egg game is top tier, apparently.
Shout out to him for sponsoring the show. So bit of a crazy week. And this is where I really want to go and get the real juicy stuff, Nick, because as a former player, we deal with a lot of this stuff too when people come for, you know, Coach Ferentz's head on social media, and it just daggers. And I would like to get in an argument with every single troll on Twitter, but I refrain, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, that we're recording this, I don't know, a week or so after Iowa and Coach Fran McCaffrey parted ways. Big figure in your life. I'd love to hear your own words about Coach Fran McCaffrey and who he was as a person, what he means to you. But, you know, kind of a end of an era, a of course, mm-hmm. right? And like, how do you process that as a former guy, someone who cares? Obviously, you know, a couple of tweets on Twitter, responding back and forth, been in some conversations. What is this all like for you?
Yeah, I was just in terms of like Coach Caffrey, Joe, like that's my guy. Like brought me in, you know, offered me a walk on spot. Someone who kind of gave me an opportunity every chance I turned, every you know place I turned, and someone I'm always super, super grateful for that I have in my life. Was at my wedding last year. You know, always a guy who's going to be, you know, really close and really special to me. And yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, bummer of a season, you know, this past year, but, I took to Twitter a couple times. I just like you, Tyler, I try not to, but sometimes it got the better of me and I did, but, no, I think just in terms of where Coach Caffrey like stands in my life, always someone that's going to be super, super important to me. And like, I feel sometimes like the program's not really going to have an opportunity to defend itself. And sometimes as like a former player, someone who's connected with the program, someone who like knows enough about the ins and outs without being too much in the details, like I can kind of provide a perspective and sometimes stand up for a program when it's easy to bash on or when that's kind of the popular thing on social media. So definitely, you know, end of an era. I know it kind of felt like there was some writing on the wall for sure, but I was still really bummed when I saw the news for sure. And I think, I mean, I'd imagine you guys might be able to relate this, to this eventually, but obviously bummed for Coach McCaffrey like on a personal level, but also just like what it means for me and like my experience with the program too. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, okay, hey, you know what? I know what that experience is like going from like the travels like, or I know like, you know, getting a chance to go in like to locker room and like meet the guys and like having that like kind of close connection with the program. And, you know, that part's kind of a bummer too. Not that I, you know, whoever the next coach is so likely to connect with alumni, but kind of having on a more personal level that relationship with the staff and everything. So, but yeah, it's different. I know they still haven't announced anybody officially yet. So definitely a kind of an interesting spot for Iowa basketball.
The latter part that you mentioned there is something that I think about often mm-hmm. and something we've talked about with this podcast, because this podcast is obviously, you know, we bring you on, we're doing basketball show tonight, no football talk, right? But mm-hmm. very heavy football show, very heavily connected to the program that still is right now in Iowa City. We have, mm-hmm. I mean, that coaching staff, the tenure there is so long and deep that most of that staff is the staff that we had. Many guys are, you know, from head coach to assistants all around. So it still feels a lot like our program, right?
Right.
And I've always wondered, and I think I've had the conversation with Kevin and Drake before, we've joked about it on air. Drake has always said this, but like when Coach Ferentz retires, like he's never jumping on a podcast again because he just doesn't care, right? And to some extent, it's funny, it's comedy, but in some way it's true. There will be a large cord of disconnect when that mm-hmm. when that happens, right? When Coach Ferentz is no longer the head coach, even from my perspective, even if this is like now my job and it's not just a passion project, but it's like, yeah, you're just doing this like because it brings in some income, some of that passion to do the show and talk about Iowa football, it's going to get lessened to some extent because it feels like it's not my program anymore. And so that's always mm-hmm. something that I've felt and I don't look forward to. It's going to come regardless. Coach Ferentz deserves to, you know, retire or move on at some point and live his life. And that he owes nothing to us. He's done plenty for us. But it is interesting that it, you know, this happens, and it almost probably feels like it distances you even a little bit further, in a way.
Yeah. And that's the thing too, is you kind of mentioned it, like the kind of like the sense of identity that you have with the program, right? Mm-hmm. Especially like growing up like through those formative years in college, like kind of having that connection with the program. And as we've kind of gotten older, obviously, like, you know, you grow in your life and you add different parts of your identity too. But that part, like, I'm always going to be like connected to the Iowa basketball program in some fashion, which is sure. a great blessing for me. And that's definitely going to be different now that Coach McCaffrey is gone, but obviously still want the program to do well and be successful. But yes, that part's going to be really a little bit different.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, it's incredible because like, it's such a profound experience in a very formative part of your life that you get a lot of your identity as from mm-hmm. going from a young boy to a young man from your years spent there, and you know how you did things, how you treated yourself, how you treated the people around you. Is like a lot of it can be come back to, you know, how you guys did things that were the basis of your program. So yeah, it's I'm sure it's tough. And like Kluver said, I'm not looking forward to the day where that cord kind of gets cut with us. My question for you is, where do you hope the program goes from here?
Yeah, I know they, like, in terms of whoever they decide to bring in, I know, like, Coach Ben McCollum's been, like, the rumored person that is likely going to be joining the program, but nothing official yet. If that's the direction they do decide to go in, I'd be excited about it. I think we'll kind of mention this on our podcast too, but Ben McCollum actually recruited me out of high school. So he was the only coach to offer me a scholarship out of high school. So,
oh, that's funny.
Yeah. So Ben McCollum's talent ID in my books, 10 out of 10.
He's A plus, man.
Yeah. But no, he recruited me when he was at Northwest Missouri State, offered me a scholarship. I had a chance. I likely was going to go there, but Coach Caffrey kind of came in and offered a walk on spot, which is what I always wanted to be. And I remember talking with kind of Ben about it. And he's like, hey, man, I get it. Like, I completely understand. And I think just looking at the way he's kind of run programs, I'd be excited about that. I know it would be a bit of a change in terms of style and pace, but I think how he runs a program from a character standpoint and running things at a high level, I think would be pretty similar as well. So obviously some things still yet to get done. No, nothing official yet, but wherever they decide to go, I hope it's still, you know, bringing somebody in who, you know, kind of prioritizes some of the same things Coach Caffrey did around. And bringing high character people, obviously the NIL portals changed a lot of that, but regardless, still kind of having some of that Iowa fabric too.
It's interesting because, and I don't want to dwell on it too much, but I do want your perspective on it. It's especially as you've gotten older, because as the further you get from it, I think I've found this with the football program, you can be a little bit less biased towards, you know, those are my guys, right? And right. You can be more objective. You mentioned the writing on the wall and sort of how, you know, the fatigue of Fran has crept in, or just the program in general. You see it all the time on Twitter, people complaining about empty stadium and, well, the girls fill the stadium. And if the men's program was just as exciting, they'd be able to as well. Do you see objectively some valid concerns with the excitement around the program as far as filling seats? Any or criticisms of Fran that you could be like, yeah, those kind of make sense. Like, how do you view that stuff? Because obviously there was something to it, right? They don't part ways for no reason.
Tell Kluver to go fuck himself.
Yeah, tell me to go fuck myself. I'm curious from a player, because when I see criticisms of KF in the program, it's like the initial reaction is like, it's tugging on your heart, right? I'm like, no, fuck you. That's wrong, right? Mm-hmm. You're wrong. But KF isn't a perfect guy, right? He could probably be a little bit more modern on the offensive side of the ball, and it only took him 25 years to get there. Maybe we're getting there with Tim Lester. And so same thing. Fran's not a perfect coach, not a perfect guy. Maybe there's some things he could have done better. And I just it's an interesting that's what pops to my head as a former player. Like, how do you view, should there have been writing on the wall? What would have given him a better chance to stay? What could he have done better to maybe get him out of this? I personally feel like Caitlin killed the men's program. Everyone cares about the women's program now. And I Grant, our producer on the show, former student that just graduated from Iowa, he's like, no, dude, if the men's, I was like, dude, I don't know. I think Caitlin literally murdered the men's program and they couldn't have done anything about it. It's just that Caitlin Clark, I don't know, unintentionally, but what are your thoughts on that?
Sure. Yeah. No, I think, and you guys kind of bring up a point, like, I don't think everything about kind of how this program went can be evaluated in a vacuum. Like, I think it's always, people want to kind of like view someone's like, oh, hey, this is like the sole reason. It's like, well, like there's, you know, some additional context there. What I can say, like, objectively, like, yeah, I had a chance to go to a few games this year. Like, definitely from a crowd attendance standpoint, wasn't where the program wants to be and not where it should be. I would caution against like fully 100% blaming, you know, like Coach Caffrey, the program in general. I thought, like, looking back on even like my time there, like, we had a pretty bad season. Like 14-19, one of the worst seasons during his tenure. And so for the most part, attendance pretty decent, like still attractive brand of basketball. I think when you look at the perfect storm of post-COVID, you know, obviously the success and rise of the women's program, and then this team kind of having, you know, a disappointing year, maybe, you know, 2 years lumped in there, like, I think that's kind of the storm where there's a little bit of lack of fan engagement. So as much as I'd love to, you know, stand up here and say, you know, Coach Caffrey's the perfect person, I don't, you know, even think he'd go that far, but there's definitely some areas where some of that definitely didn't benefit the program. I think also just like the landscape's really changed in college basketball the last couple of years too, which for better or worse, especially around like NIL, I think that's been an issue that's been tough for the program to kind of overcome with not having as deep of pockets as some of our competitors. But I recognize from an objective lens, if I take off my Iowa hoops, you know, career knowledge, like taking off of those glasses, I definitely can see there's some areas where the program was a little bit stagnant. But I just think the bummer is, I think for the most part, the same things that made it stagnant were also what made it successful. Like the same, like attractive brand of basketball that brought people in is also kind of, you know, maybe what didn't lead to some attendance as well. But nothing can be viewed in a vacuum, I suppose. So that's my very long-winded answer for you, Tyler. I hope that provided a little
bit. It's great. I think the main point there of it being multifactorial, like it's not just Fran's job. It's not just the player's job, Beth's job. The mixture of the women's program on the rise, the COVID stuff, like there are quite literally 100 million factors that all play a role. And sometimes it's just a perfect storm. I think too, like, and maybe it's part of that. The fans had the women's program to attach to. Mm-hmm. So on the men's side, I think that the fans aren't totally out of the loop on that either. Like they don't have, and this will, people love this because I always talk about the fans, like, because they think I hate the fans. But like the reality is like, I think fans patience levels for humans these days, they're not high. Right. And we get, you know, everything is right now. Open up your phone. You can go to Twitter. You can get the news right now, right? You go to the corner. You can get your fast food right now. Your coffee is right around the corner. Order it, walk in, grab it right off the shelf. There's just not a lot of patience. And especially like you said, with the NIL and the portal era, and you see teams turn around somewhat, it's like, all right, bang. You can go to this. Ben McCollum walks into Drake after brings a whole new team. They make the round of 32 in year one, right? With a coach from D2. It's like, okay, so now why can't any Division I program with more money, more resources do the same thing with another coach? And that's what fans see. Frankly, I think that's what athletic departments and ADs see. And they're like, yeah, we're just going to do that, especially if we have a lot of money. And so I think literally some of it is just like, we've had Fran for 15 years. Let's just get somebody else. And the unfortunate side of that is there is a human, Fran McCaffrey, on the other side of that, that has to bear the brunt of, I'm the one who's now out. I'm the one who's now like kicked to the curb after this 15, everything I've given to the University of Iowa. And then people like you who are connected, have relationships, were his players, that hurts. But from the other side, it's like, it's not even personal almost. It's just the way that it is. And so it's really unfortunate, but I don't know, man. It's crazy.
I think what it's going to be interesting for me is like, if some of these same reasons or kind of like not excuses, but more like reasons for lack of engagement still persist with a new coach or not. Like, I think obviously there's going to be some new buzz bringing a new coach, no matter, you know, what program it is. Like there's going to be some of that. I think the number one area and factor that I'm looking at to see if Iowa men's basketball is going to be successful is if the athletic department decides to invest in it more substantially than in past years. I think like I saw from my experience anecdotally with the program, but also just in general with the NIL era, like not to lay everything at NIL, but it's really hard to win if you have some pretty low coffers. And kind of the new rev sharing, you know, opportunities that are gonna be coming here. You know, if the settlement gets passed, like there is going to be more investment in the program, hopefully, but I think it kind of starts obviously bringing in a coach, giving them some funds to bring in the right guys. And from there, I think we'll be able to kind of tell if this program is going to be invested in substantially. So that's kind of what I'm looking at. I'm, as someone who played for that basketball program and has been a lifelong fan, I sure hope it happens, that there's kind of that proper level of investment to compete at a high level. I'm optimistic it can happen, but that's where I feel a little bit bummed, is kind of like fans being upset that this team wasn't where they wanted it to be, but also there wasn't kind of a level of investment from, like, I'm not asking Joe Schmo to commit like $20 more to Iowa men's basketball, but just from like a higher level, like from an NIL standpoint, I think we were caught on our heels a little bit, and I hope that changes here.
Yeah, I mean, well, the report is that as far as basketball goes, like we're in the bottom third of the Big Ten, right? And
I would say, I saw like someone on Twitter, which is always funny. I'm sure you guys relate to this now. Like Iowa basketball, I'm like the bottom third of the Big Ten. They're only paying their guys $300,000 a year. And it's like, I was like, are you scared? Like,
and Nick's over there, like, God damn, I would love $3,000 a year, man.
I know, no kidding. Which, like, that part's funny in itself of like just how much has changed since we graduated. But also, like, that number wasn't accurate either. Like, I would say, like, that's definitely below that as well on like the high end. And kind of what I know from what guys are getting offered from these other schools with deeper pockets, like, it was almost kind of incredible that we were able to maintain the team that we had based on the level of coffers that we had. So hopefully that changes, but yeah, $300,000 men being considered on the low end doesn't sound like a bad gig. So
no, that's a pretty damn good gig to go to school and play basketball.
Bro, could you, but, Nick, what would you have done with 300 G's, dude?
What I've done. I would have been smart. Definitely put it, put some away for a rainy day fund. Invest. Outside of that, dude, I probably would have taken a crazy trip or something. I would have taken a crazy trip for sure. It's funny. I'm planning a trip now over to Europe with my wife, and just like looking back on that, like we had a chance to do, as part of the program, we did a foreign trip once every 4 years. We went over to Europe and had a chance to like, and looking back on that experience, like getting a chance to go over to Europe with all my buddies for like 9 to 10 days on someone else's dime, like that's about all the NIL I would have thought I would have ever needed. Like get a chance to like have all that kind of experience. So, but no. Question for you guys: if you guys had $300,000 a year for being a long snapper, what are you running up?
Same thing. I'm going right into the Invesco QQQ, dude. Give me VTI. You know, the just the 95% of it right into the stock market, and then. I don't know. Me and Kevin would have
eaten Poncheros burritos a day.
We would have had so much Poncheros, so much more Poncheros than we already had. No, like
a lot of Poncheros.
dumbest, most boring Kluver answer for anybody who's
But I mean, honestly, dude, you're 18 to 22. If that's not what you're doing, it's inherently the wrong choice. But at the same time, you got to think it depends for each guy. Like if you're like definitely going to go to the NBA, you're going to make so much more money. Go ahead and spend it right now. All right. Have the time of your life. Go crazy.
I don't know. Yeah. But even then, like injury, like you got to put some of it away. I mean, Kevin and I would have, I already tried with like, so every year when we went to a bowl game, we got like $400. Like,
like that went straight to Riverside or what?
No, that, for Drake. No, yes.
It went to the local casino at the bowl game.
That nice. We nice.
For Drake, it did. For me, every year, because I'm like a workout CrossFit junkie, I'd like buy $400 worth of more equipment, like a barbell, nice. You know, yeah. Some like a pull-up bar, some weights. And now to the point where like started literally in 2014 with our first bowl money. And now for the last 10, 11 years, I've built into my now home gym that's like pretty damn good, full of equipment and, and stuff. But that's so the only thing I would have spent it on.
Here's what I'm kind of curious about. Is back in college, we paid, correct me if I'm wrong, Kluver, $330 a month for rent.
I think it was it might have started not there. I think we finished around like 380, okay. and then utilities on top of that. Yeah, it was pretty
ridiculously cheap. These guys are getting paid and sent. Where are they living in Iowa City? Like, are they just all posted up in the Chauncey downtown, or like, what? Where are these guys deciding to live now?
I relate to you guys. My rent was $392 a month, and I lived on the basement floor of an apartment right outside Carver Hawkeye Arena. Got flooded twice, but it was me, another walk-on family friend. So it's like, yeah, we're not like going crazy. But I would imagine. Obviously, I don't have these guys' address or anything, but I think. They're probably living a little bit better than I was living, which is good. I'm glad that no one has to, which is good. That's the thing too. It's like, I don't want people to think I'm just like raising my fist at the sky. Like, no, how dare these guys? Like, no, I'm glad that people are having this experience and that it's always so funny. Cause like what I was always told in college was like, no one would ever pay you that. Like there's no market for that. So like, don't even bother. And like now that has just been blown to smithereens.
Did you get in on this NIL compensation thing on the back end?
Sure did.
Absolutely.
Sure did.
Okay.
We're like 2 weeks away from a final decision on that.
I think it's April 7th or 17th.
April 7th.
Yeah.
Were you able to get your calendar for anything? Any specific reason, Tyler, or just curious out of?
I want $40,000 from the NCAA. That's why I got it on my fucking calendar. I'll tell you that right now.
You're damn right.
And so it came to mind. I was like, "Oh, Nick's definitely a part of that. He's got some years on that as well. So it should be interesting to see what happens." I really hope that nothing like there's no hiccups and they're like, "Sorry."
There's a lot of people that are pissed off with this ruling. So it's very possible the judge does not allow this ruling to go through. But we'll see.
Very sad.
Yeah. If you thought there was an NCAA settlement and Jordan Bohannon wouldn't have let me known about it,
that's true.
My guy had me well informed there. Which
Jabo probably sent you all a PowerPoint. Like, hey,
he filled me in with as much information as I ever possibly need, probably more than that.
Speaking of not getting in on it, our former third co-host.
Drake didn't.
It's like 2 days after the deadline to sign up. He's like, hey, when did I have to sign up for that?
Oh, no.
And I texted all these guys like a month before. Hey, get in on this. All right. And do it. And he's just like, man, I forgot. Like, bro, you don't have a job. What are you so busy with? You took 20 minutes.
Probably the biggest bag fumble I've ever seen online in my life. Yeah, that's tough. Man, it is funny, though, the NIL stuff. You can relate because you're a guy that was just like us. Like, literally give me an extra $4,000 a month, and I am going to feel like I am Jeff Bezos, mm-hmm. okay? And, like, I can do anything now. I am God. I have all of the money. $4,000 a month. Give me less than 50 a year.
As a 20-year-old kid, you know, you're still going to school full time. You're still spending so much time with your athletics. You're getting all your food for free. I don't even know like how I would have spent $4,000.
Well, I was going to say, you guys were big golfers. Did you golf a lot, Nick?
I did not start golf until post college, but I golf quite a bit now. But I would, if our team had the kind of money that, you know, the market has now, I would shudder to think the bills we would run up at Summit or any of these bars in downtown Iowa City. Like, I would shudder to think where that money would have gone. But hey, you know, back to the Iowa City community, you know, just, you know, getting that cash,
right,
getting
back, that cash going,
right back into the community. That's how we reinvest. So,
yeah. Local economy.
I'm just here to support my local businesses, man.
That's it.
With my NIL dollars. I would have loved to see Nicholas Bear on a couple advertisements around town. That would have been fantastic.
That would be good. If you guys could have had one when you were in college, is there any like one that stands out to you? Like, oh man, I would have.
From Iowa City or just
like yeah, like if like so-and-so business or organization in Iowa City reached out to you.
I've got a little Ponchero saying that back in the day. What was it, Clue?
Well, yeah, one's a snack, two's a meal is Kevin's big saying with burritos. So like,
that's awesome.
I would
love to have a little deal with Poncheros with that saying.
Still to this day think that we're gonna get a sponsorship or do a little like advertising for Dane's Dairy.
Nice.
Yeah, or Heinz Ice Cream, which is what Bo introduced us. So a big ice cream guy. The one that comes to mind actually first though is not for me, Kev. It was for Josie and Bo. Finn and Feather.
That would have been custom made.
Yeah. They could have just done some amazing stuff for them. I mean, it would have been great.
Josie is going there like every other day. He's like, I gotta go to Finn and Feather, get some more
something. Something, you know. I remember we went in there one time. I still have a picture in my phone. We wasted like 90 minutes or 2 hours. We didn't buy a single thing, but we just walked around the entire store and just like took shit off the shelves. Like it was hilarious. It was
I think Josie spent about 10 times as much time at Fin and Feather than he did fishing our entire 4 years.
Probably. There. Yeah. Yep. Cool. Well, Nick Bear, thanks for joining the show. The tournament is going to work its way down. Who you had Duke winning, right?
I had Duke winning. I think it's going to be relatively chalky here going through. If I had to pick a team where I'm like, hey, this team could potentially make a run, or at least fun to watch, is this BYU team. I'm not sure if everybody had a chance to watch them last night previous night. But, like, they have shooters. They have incredible athletes. This guy, Kay Makeda, is 6'8", 230, rebounds everything. Just dunks everything, rebounds everything. Someone that I've really enjoyed getting a chance to watch and – enjoyed them being Wisconsin last night. So they can make a deep run as like a six seed. Potentially, I know they'll run into Duke eventually, but I only have a round of kind of the nightcap here later here on Sunday night. But yeah, should be another good couple weeks of basketball here.
The fans will hear this after this game has concluded, but Iowa women will play Oklahoma in a 6-3 matchup tomorrow as we record this. Have you got a chance to watch a lot of women this year at all? And how do we feel about their chances? I feel like they're a dangerous team. They could make the second weekend here.
Yeah, a little bit. I've had a chance to watch them a little bit. So they ran Murray State right off the road there. I just saw like everybody score, which is great. I mean, that's a pretty cool experience for everybody to get in. So I think I will profess I haven't watched a whole lot of Oklahoma women's basketball this year. So I am not as well-versed on their team, but on the whole, I've been pretty impressed with this, you know, Iowa women's team. Hope they can continue to make a run, and it's kind of what they do in March. So looking forward to it.
I have UConn as my champion in the women's bracket, but currently I'll just tell you, I'm like you, Nick. Again, with those upsets I was picking, this is quite literally the worst year of the brackets that I've ever done. I'm currently in the 17th percentile. I'm ranked 21 nice. Millionth. And yeah, I'm horrible. I'm just horrible.
Yeah, I think I'm in 22%. So
We have a walk-on army bracket. So like some of our best listeners of the podcast, Patreon subscribers, we did a bracket. There's 54 total people. I'm 53rd of 54.
So there's room for improvement. That's what I'm hearing. There's an opportunity for growth there, Tyler.
There's a lot of room for growth. It's a tough year. I wanted one of our listeners to win. I'm just going to go with that. I let them be a part of it. So, my man, thank you for coming on. Give us a little perspective, a little basketball talk. This is this is better than anything we could have done as far as just me and Kevin talking tonight. So we appreciate it.
We appreciate you guys having me on. It's always a good time.
Eat your eggs. We'll talk to you next time. Until then,
go check out the plug the show one last time, my friend.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. 3 points podcast. I pretty much tweet out every episode. Feel free to follow me on Twitter, Nicholas Bear, but we're available on Spotify, Apple. The title is 3 points podcast. So we'll probably get an episode out here following this round of games. So likely Tuesday or Wednesday night. But yeah, appreciate you guys having me on. Always a pleasure. Go Hawks.
There you go. Worldwide. See you then. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.